Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Informal Courses for Adults.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Does the size of your body shape the course of your life? Stephanie Klein's parents were convinced that it does. So when their overweight daughter was 8 years old, they started sending her to a nutritional counselor. Approaching her teenage years without having lost the extra weight or the taste for raw cookie dough and cheese doodles, Klein was sent off to Fit Camp, a place that promised to help her change her habits and lose weight without ever feeling hungry. What she found was a place unlike anywhere else she had been before, an environment where at a size 16 she was among the thinnest of her peers, with a shot not only at losing the excess weight she so despised, but at being genuinely popular as well. She writes about the experience in her new book, Moose, a memoir of Fat Camp, and she's in town for two signing events listed on the Think page of KERA.org. Stephanie, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
At one point in the book, you describe yourself as fat in the head. Can you talk about what that means?
Mm-hmm. When I was 8 years old, I was sent to this nutritionist, and she had said to us, it was a bunch of teenagers in her basement, and she said, "You will all be fat for the rest of your life, even if you look thin." Now, that's interesting advice to give an 8-year-old. And it turns out she was sort of true. She was sort of right in that how much do any of us really let go of our childhood identities? You know, whether you're fat or you were the kid with the mole or whatever it is, I think being fat in the head for me has been not shedding that childhood identity as being called Moose.
Mm-hmm. You know, the funny thing about that is you think about people who were very thin as kids, who gain weight as adults, that don't often seem as bothered by it as people who started with the opposite problem.
I think that it's a lot, it's very similar to how I imagine old people look at themselves in the mirror. How I used to watch my grandmother, who would look at an older photo of herself, and she'd go, "Oh God, so young, so young. I still see myself that way. And when I look in the mirror, I don't really know that that's me." And I would imagine that adults who had maybe gained weight out of stress, divorce, or whatever changes are in their lives, they put on some extra weight, they don't necessarily see it in themselves. They know that their clothes don't fit, but they're not plagued by the mirror as much, I think, as people who've grown up dealing with it their whole lives.
When did you become aware that you were heavier than people around you and that people disapproved of that?
Oh, boy. Well, I don't remember a time when I didn't feel that way. So there goes that answer. I remember there was a time in Spanish class where we were going around the room and we were saying flaca or gorda, fat or thin, just practicing as Star and Ser. And I went around and said, "Yes, soy flaca, I'm thin." And the teacher stood up and he said, "Stephanie, actually, you might want to do yours over."
Oh, my God.
There's no shame in it. You know, we are who we are. And maybe, you know, it's time you do yours over. And I had to say soy gorda. And then I was humiliated the whole rest of the day.
So you describe your dad now as your best friend, but he is definitely someone who has an issue with you when your weight is up.
Absolutely. He is one of my absolute best friends. I talk to him about everything going on in my life, but including the fact that I don't think he handled, you know, my weight properly. I think that what I've learned anyway is that sometimes it's a father's job to treat his daughter like daddy's little girl, and that you're beautiful no matter what, and to really encourage her to be, you know, be the most talented, you know, inspiring person that she can be and focus on that. And it's maybe the mother's role to stand up and do a little bit of the disciplining in the house and to show by example, in other words, to say, "No, well, ladies, you know, we've already had our piece," you know, that kind of instruction.
Now, you came home and told your dad that they'd called you Moose, and he said,
"Yes,
it's fine."
I said that, you know, I came home crying hysterically. The kids at school call me Moose, and I didn't want to admit it. And I finally had the courage to tell him. And instead of saying, "You know, don't worry about it, people outgrow these things." Imagine, you know, if kids my age, you know, if people were still calling me Baldy Locks, you know. he didn't say any of those things. He wasn't comforting at all. He cracked up laughing. He thought it was hysterical that the kids called me Moose. He goes, "What a great name." "Thanks, Dad. You're very sensitive." So, you know, and he would do other things along those lines, puff out his cheeks at me at the dinner table. For pay what you weigh day at the ground round, he said, "I'll be losing out on this deal." So I got a lot of it from him. And how do I reconcile the difference? I think that he didn't realize the damage that he was doing when he did it. He was just, he thought that he was saving me, you know, that the world does judge a book by its cover. And I think that that's how he really felt about, you know, why he was doing what he was doing.
Well, the interesting thing about the whole, about all this is that you've learned to feel good about yourself sort of regardless. And yet it's always in your mind how much you weigh on a particular day.
Absolutely. You just don't lose it. And anyone who says they do and don't care and don't know it, you know, I don't believe them. Who's grown up, you know, anyone I've gone to fat camp with, in fact, definitely they all know. I have a girlfriend who said for her wedding pictures, she, this was my camp counselor, she refused to lose weight to fit into the tiny, you know, wedding dress because she goes, that's not a reality. I don't want to remember, you know, my wedding day, this magical thing that it's not even me. Not reality.
You write that the times in your life when you've been the thinnest, you've been, I think the
most
word is,
miserable.
Yeah.
No, a walking psycho wreck.
Walking psycho wreck is the exact quote I was looking for in my notes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually true because a lot of the times I hear, oh, well, the reason you become obese is because you're filling a void and you're grabbing food and it's an addiction and you're grabbing at this stuff to fill something that's missing and you must be miserable. And I've had the actual opposite happen in my life where the times in my life where I was the heaviest I've been, it was because I was in love. I was so happy. You share, you know, love with food. You're showing, oh, what should we order tonight? And you're cooking things for the people you love and you don't have to worry so much. And then when I was my thinnest, I was going through a divorce. I was miserable. I was dating, trying to meet someone new. And even though the outside world was like, wow, you look great, I was miserable inside. So I've had the opposite. I didn't want to eat. Nothing excited me. I felt empty inside, and I became thin. So,
but there were still people in your life, people who care about you, who said, look at you, you're so beautiful. Aren't you happy now that you've lost weight? Do you resent that people sort of praise you when you're thin and just don't say anything when you're heavier?
I think it goes both ways. You want it and you don't want it. You want to hear, wow, you're looking great, because it makes you feel good that your effort is paying off and being noticed. So, you know, it does feel good. But then sometimes the wow becomes, wow, you've really lost weight.
Thank God.
And it becomes, well, was I that bad before, you know? And so what I do say is that I spent my whole life trying to be thin just to meet someone who would love me once I was fat.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you don't want someone who's going to expect you to always be a certain way.
Right. I want them to love me, and no matter how I am.
So when you learned that you would be going to fat camp, what were your expectations of how you would reappear at, what was it, eighth grade or ninth grade?
Right. It was after eighth grade. Mm-hmm. I was going to be the popular girl and everybody was going to like me and the cool boys were going to want to date me. And my whole life was going to change, you know, when I became thin. You know, I had the someday syndrome, you know, the someday when I'm thin, everything will be better. Or someday when I have more money, or someday when I move out with my parents. We do that a lot. We give our somedays, you know, credit for being this remarkable time in our lives when really you should be doing it right now and being happy with where you are.
So you got there and discovered that, in fact, and we should say you were never just, I mean, I guess you were technically obese, but you were, by today's standards, there are a lot of heavy kids around today. You weren't as big as a lot of kids might be.
I don't know. I think, well, I don't remember what my exact BMI was. I know that's all the rage right now in all the papers. But I was clinically obese, so I don't really know. I haven't done enough research to know.
How much was the camp really about healthy habits and about getting you to really change your life as opposed to just losing weight?
I don't think a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think they would talk about health but they wouldn't get into diabetes. You know, childhood onset of diabetes. They weren't necessarily focusing on health. For me, it seemed very much like adolescence. The focus was really on appearances and aesthetics. Mm-hmm. And that's how I felt. You know, it wasn't, oh, I want to get thin so I'm healthy and that I, you know, live a more active lifestyle, that I can, you know, live longer. It was, I want to fit into the cool clothes and I want people to like me. And so at fat camp, you know, they really worked us hard. But I don't know that they really gave us the tools to equip us to do well after we left that controlled environment, because we didn't have any choices. Everything was controlled. So your counselors are monitoring your food intake and you're not allowed to get seconds or anything. But in the real world, you are. And how do you compensate for that? And how do you teach that? And you need to give kids choices.
Stephanie Klein is my guest. Her new book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. So you did lose weight. There were some kids that would come back every year and they'd be the same weight they'd been.
The fat camp champs.
Yeah.
Yes.
But for you, it seemed to sort of work.
It did. It did. And I think it was because I was very much obsessed with my appearance because I wanted, you know, I could say this now as an adult, I wanted to gain my, you know, my father's love. You know, for me, it was, I wasn't good enough until I was thin and I wouldn't be liked. You know, he said, nobody likes fat girls. And if you want people to like you, you'll lose weight. And it was about, I had to do something inside to change me instead of, you know, basically just becoming, you know, a better person or any of the inside stuff. It wasn't about that. So
do you think, you know, nowadays when people see fat kids, they instantly look at the parents and think, how could you? How could you let your child have that problem? Mm-hmm. Do you think your dad struggled at all with the idea that somehow people would consider you a reflection of his parenting?
Were they embarrassed of me being? Because I definitely saw that at fat camp where there were parents who you could tell they would look at their child and say, well, I don't want people to think that I'm a bad parent. It's a reflection of me. Mm-hmm. My parents weren't that way. I don't really think that that was it at all.
Mm-hmm. Was your dad, I mean, is there part of you that thinks that he was right, that people did judge you unfairly harshly when you were heavy?
Absolutely, they did.
Mm-hmm. It's got to be hard to kind of deal with all those truths at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you're going through adolescence, and it's a really hard, scary time in your life. And then to look back on it as an adult, you know, it's funny because I really was able to get into it. Each chapter, I begin with a different diary quote from my actual childhood diaries that I saved. You know, the bedazzled hearts, heart dotted eyes or hearts.
They're priceless entries, by the way.
Thank you. But you look back at that and it all comes back to you. And It didn't hurt that when I was pregnant with twins, my doctor came to me and said, well, you need to gain 50 pounds. And that was hard for me to hear because it was like going and watching the scale tick up again and going back to a life of elastic waistbands.
Did you worry a little bit that you were obsessed with your weight at that point when it became hard, even for the health of your babies?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I resented it. And I knew that I shouldn't feel the way that I did. I knew that it wasn't normal. I would go every week and I'd put on a happy face and go, look, I'm gaining enough weight for the pregnancy. But meanwhile, I hated every second of it. And I hated that I hated it.
So you didn't enjoy carte blanche to go eat whatever you wanted. Instead, you thought, look at this, I'm ruining myself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I felt guilty about doing it because you hear all of this. Look, you're not eating for three. And, it's... Don't go overboard because you have more risk of gestational diabetes. So all of those types of warnings kept me feeling guilty.
Stephanie Klein is my guest. She's an author and blogger. You can find her at stephanieklein.blogs.com. Her new book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. We'll return to our conversation with her in just a moment. You can join us by sending email to think@kera.org or you can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest is blogger and author Stephanie Klein. Her new book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. She's in town for two different signing events. There's one at 3 this afternoon at the Torrid Store at the Parks Arlington Shopping Center, and another at the Border Store on Preston Road in Dallas at 7. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. You also picked up some really unhealthy habits when you were at fat camp, purging. Mm-hmm. You were drinking vinegar at one point.
Apple cider vinegar shots.
Mm-hmm. And
eating with chopsticks, sucking on ice cubes, all sorts of ridiculous.
Yeah, it seems in a way like an environment that would be perfect for causing a lot of people to really magnify whatever problems they had to begin with.
It could be. I mean, I think that the counselors should be watching and keeping a better eye out on the campers. I was a counselor myself and was actually feeding into it, no pun intended. I was doing the vinegar shots and having my little 8-year-old, you know, eventually I became a counselor in fat camp and having them do it there.
Do you struggle now? Your kids are very, very young, but have you asked yourself how you would handle it if they happen to be overweight later?
Of course. And I know that I will try to focus on their talents and bringing out, you know, the best in them in terms of encouraging them to, you know, do things that bring out their strengths so that they build confidence inside for things that they're doing. And I think once they realize, wow, I can achieve goals, I can achieve this, I can lose weight. And, you know, but it has to come from them and they have to want it. I would never, you know, force it. But I also would emphasize fairness in the house. I would, you know, if they wanted, you know, more than their share, I'd say, look, we all got this, you know, it's about fairness, not about calories, not about, oh, well, hey, tubby, no more for you. I would never, you know, which is what I got growing up. So, you know, I learned that. I think all of us, you know, we don't want to grow up to be our mothers and we don't want to, you know, and, you know, you end up doing things unconsciously. But I hope that I'm conscious enough in writing this book that I've come to terms with what I probably would like to do.
Your mom is one of those people that many people sort of despise because she's naturally thin. She doesn't really think about it one way or another. And at one point you write about the girls in school. You're in high school or junior high, and they're all eating fruit roll-ups and drinking sodas, and you have your very healthy lunch where, you know, your snack was a raisin box and all
the
that.
The little raisins.
And I'm wondering if you, and you write about just really envying them and the lunch that they're having. Mm-hmm. And did you envy the fact that they could have that food that you wanted or that they didn't want more than what was in front of them, that they could stop there?
No, it was definitely not. I don't think you think about, oh, I want to be them because they don't have to finish all the food on their plate. No, it was, wow, they can eat that food and don't have to think twice about it. They can eat whatever, you know, in my head, they can eat and do whatever they want and they still get to wear the cool clothes.
Has it been, you're in your early 30s now?
Mm-hmm, 32.
Is any of this sort of less of an issue for you as people get older? And even, I'm sure there must be people that you went to high school with that have put on some weight over the years. Does it make it easier? Does the playing field level off?
I don't know. I think, you know, it's hard. I don't know that it really does. And, you know, I think about it in general. I mean, yeah, you could be more intellectual about it. And you can, you know, say to yourself, if you are putting on that weight, you know, intellectually, I'm not that weight. You know, it doesn't define who I am and my worth and all of that. So it's different. I don't know about the judgment in other people. I don't know how it's that much different.
I would imagine that a lot of the people who can relate to this book are still overweight today, people who've been struggling with their weight since childhood. Statistically, it's much more common that you'll be overweight as an adult. I'm wondering if you've come across people who are sort of irritated that you're not overweight today, that sort of want you to still be fat.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing that, or I haven't. No one's ever said it, so I don't know. And the book just came out yesterday, so it's hard to know exactly. But I could imagine that people will think it's self-deprecating and you think you're fat. I mean, you're nothing compared to, you know, what I am or what I've been. And there's, you know, actually a section in the book that talks about how we try to outfat each other. You know, well, you have no cause to complain because I'm twice your size and, you know, you have nerve. You should be happy. And you could say that about any problem. I'm not, you know, I don't think it makes the things that I worry about or have worried about any less real or any less universal. I think that they appeal to everyone. And it's not just about the weight either. You know, they're being prejudiced on the fact that I'm not as, you know, heavy maybe. But overall, you know, it's a universal feeling.
Why do you think that people find it so easy to be very judgmental about weight in ways that other, even if you want to consider being overweight a personal flaw, people don't necessarily point out other personal flaws that we might have?
Because they think it's something that you can control. Mm-hmm. And maybe they see it as a character flaw in that you're lazy and not self-disciplined. And I think they're uneducated about it because it's an addiction and it's hard to quit anything and you can't go cold turkey with food. You know, except Thanksgiving.
You have to wake up every day and make the same choices that you made yesterday and kind of deal with the same
thing.
And
it's hard and it's breaking habits. And I think that people are judgmental about it because they think, hey, you could do something about this and you're not.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is Stephanie Klein, whose new book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. Let's speak to Joan in Dallas. Hi, Joan.
Hi. It's really interesting for me to hear this because when I was a child and all the way through college, I had this perception, which I guess I got from my family, I don't know, but I had this perception that I was fat. I look back at pictures, and I certainly wasn't. Now, after some 50 years or so, I actually am fat, and I would really like to go to a fat farm or whatever they're called today, but it seems like everything is a spa for the beautiful to go for a week of relaxation. I mean, is there anywhere to really go to help one, you know, get started?
I certainly don't know. I know that you could maybe volunteer to be a counselor at a fat camp. You'll certainly get a lot of exercise and they'll pay you. So you could do that. I was a counselor at fat camp and, you know, you're all struggling with it together. And yeah, it's really hard and you're climbing these, you know, hills and it's taxing on your body, but it is a bonding experience. So I don't know. I would suggest doing some web searching about it.
Did you bond with your sister at fat camp at all? She was not heavy when she went along with you that first summer.
Exactly. She was not heavy at all. And today she is. And, you know, it says a lot about maybe, you know, it's certainly genetics are at play, but it also says something about the environment. You know, we became obsessed with food. All you do is talk about it all day long. You're in therapy about it. You're losing weight and it's so much of a focus. And in bonding with my sister at fat camp, you know, she started to call herself fat because she identified with everyone in her cabin. And I was like, you're not fat. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. You know, and so there's that. You know, I think camp in general is a great experience for people to bond and feel closer. So,
what was it like when suddenly you had been teased at school and you had friends, but it wasn't, you write, you were both fat and smart, which was like social suicide.
Exactly. I wasn't smart and funny. You know, it's just smart and fat. It's like lima beans.
So suddenly you're at camp surrounded by, there's a level playing field, right?
Right. We called it fat flocked when you show up and you're on the kind of thinner side of fat and all the boys come around and, wow, look at you. You know, wow, you're so pretty. And what are you doing here? You don't need to be here. What size are you? How much do you weigh? And, it's really, it builds so much confidence, and it's something that I don't think a lot of people think of. That's definitely more true, I believe, than at fat camps opposed to regular camps. And I've been to both. The promiscuity that goes on at fat camp is so much more because a lot of us, you know, as a adolescent, the opposite sex doesn't want to even look at you. And then all of a sudden you're at fat camp and everyone's fat and everyone's hooking up in the bushes. Or, you know, going skinny dipping, what we call chunky dunking.
Yeah, you would make a point of, you would try to get a sign for the chores that would allow you the time to go and sneak off into a canoe or whatever.
Exactly. I wanted more free play time to be with the boys.
And how separate were you? Was the day mostly co-ed? Was it mostly kind of single sex?
No, it was definitely single sex. They didn't want us, you know, girls worrying about being seen in our bathing suits, you know, during the pool swimming time. And they definitely kept it separate. And it was social at the meals and at the evening activities and the free time.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. My guest is author and blogger Stephanie Klein. Her new book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. Let's speak to Tyler in Dallas. Hi, Tyler.
Hello. My comment is that I'm a man, and I've had weight issues all my life, but it's from the complete opposite side. I cannot gain weight very much at all, and to do so is nearly unhealthy to consume vast amounts of food to be able to gain weight. I weigh about 125 pounds, and I'm about 5'11", and all growing up, I've been pretty much that static weight, and it's almost always one of the very first things noted about me whenever I meet new people, and it has always struck me as one of those things that kind of picks at me.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, it's hard. Body image, you know, in itself, and I'm sure it does stand out, and it's hard. I think the only thing you could do is live a healthy lifestyle as you can and realize, you know, that you're doing the best you can. That's all any of us can do.
Having become sort of a public figure, was there anything, I mean, you've blogged about your entire life, really, but did you hesitate at all to put this out there? Did you think, well, now if I gain weight, people are going to notice. If I lose weight, people are going to notice, and who needs that?
I didn't struggle with that until maybe the after, you know, after fact. no, but it is funny because when I reached out to former fat campers and counselors, a lot of them didn't want to come forward and didn't want to be associated with ever going to a fat camp. Whether they were heavy now or thin now, they didn't want to ever admit they had gone to fat camp because I guess there's a certain sense of shame in it. I don't know. I've always been, you know, I'll tell my banker, hey, I went back. I'll tell anyone. So I didn't really feel that. But now that you go on tour, on book tour, I'll be traveling the country. And there's that feeling of, wow, do they expect me to look thinner? Do they expect me, you know, to be heavier? And, you know, there is that. But overall, I think I don't make the message of the book about being, you know, what I weigh now, whether I'm skinny or fat. I'm always, you know, going to emotionally feel like Moose and intellectually as an adult say, you might feel that way, but that's not who you are anymore, and have to kind of talk myself off that ledge.
Do other people come to you now? I know the book is brand new out, but you've been writing about planning to write the book for some time. Do people come to you and ask for how you get to that place where you learn to talk yourself off that ledge?
Sure. I think what's easy is to, I look, the back of my cover of my book is a photo of me, the before photo that they take at camp, where the counselor comes to you and says, okay, you know, everybody, let's go get our before pictures taken. And you go and you stand before a camera and they instruct you not to smile. And you're in a bathing suit and you're thinking, well, why shouldn't I smile? Well, because you're fat and you can be happy at the end of summer in your after picture. And so when, you know, I look at that, I don't know, does that answer the question?
Yeah, I mean,
I look at that picture on the back of that cover and I say, okay, I have to like talk positively to her. And it's not this, oh, wow, you're beautiful, you're wonderful. And you know, sort of looking in the mirror and doing this positive self-talk, stroking my arms and telling them what a great job they're doing staying attached to my shoulders. you know, it's more like looking back at her, the Stephanie that I was younger, and saying, you know what, you weren't that bad. And as much as you felt that way, that's not who you were. And you along the line, you let people believe, you let people make you believe that that's who you were, but it's not who you are, and it's not who you are anymore. And that's really how I, you know, got to that place. You know, it takes time, and it takes a lot of self-actualization.
Being overweight is certainly not like having a disability or some other things that can happen in your childhood that would be really rough. But sometimes when people experience something difficult, they'll say, well, I wouldn't trade that because it made me who I am mm-hmm. today. And I'm wondering, if you think back to proms and all kinds of things and how it would have felt to be one of the thin, pretty girls, would you trade out the childhood that you had for the one that you might have had if you'd always been tiny?
No, I thought about it, and no, because I think a certain amount of that suffering gives you empathy towards other people. I would never in a million years ever make fun of, you know, anyone overweight or whatever, you know, their ailment or whatever it is. I think there's a certain sensitivity that's tattooed on you that I think people can sense. You know, some people call it that ugly duckling syndrome. She doesn't know she's hot. She's the best kind of girl to go after. You know, so there's that. I think also when you've lived that kind of people putting you down all the time, I at least wanted to struggle and to fight against that stereotype of, oh, you can't do it. So it made me work harder at proving them wrong. You know, the whole happiness is the best revenge kind of thing. So
Of course, you look right now, you're happily married, you're very successful in your career. Could you have written this book if you still felt really bad about your weight?
I don't know. I mean, I'm very honest in the book, and even towards the end of the book. It's not, oh, wow, I'm fixed, I'm cured, la-di-da, everything's good now. I say, there's not a day that goes by where, you know, I don't worry about, you know, appearance. But it does get easier. And in reading it and writing it, I've come to the conclusion that, wow, you know what? Your body's been through a lot, and it's taken you all over this country, and you've gone, you know, you've given birth to twins, and you've, you know, made out, you know, on a rock, and your body's done all of this great stuff for you. You know, be kind to it and love it. And I see it more as a vehicle and really trying to take care of it so I can stay in it longer. And when I look at it that way, it becomes less about me and who I am inside, and it's less wrapped up in my identity. And I'm easier on myself. I'm much more laid back about it.
On your blog, you have 100 things about you, and I guess it's more than 100 now. And you put things out there that, and there are things in the book that, that people would find just incredibly hard to admit. Even you talk about having had a bedwetting problem for mm-hmm. a long time. Mm-hmm. Does saying it out loud yourself give you control over things that still embarrass you?
Absolutely. I think everyone should do it. It's the most freeing, fabulous thing to just say whatever you're scared of, whatever you're so frightened of. If you put it out there, it's so empowering because it takes away the ability for anyone else to ever hold anything against you. You're like, yeah, I did that. So what? You know what? We're all human. Yeah, it was embarrassing, but you get over it.
Was there a first time that you learned that, a first thing that you revealed and then thought, I'm going to become a blogger?
I got to think about that.
About it during the break. We'll be back in just a minute with Stephanie Klein. She is an author, and you can find her blog at stephanieklein.blogs.com. It's called Greek Tragedy. The new book is called Moose, a memoir of fat camp. If you'd like to join us, you can send email to think@kera.org, or you can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's informal courses for adults, offering summer escapes from the everyday. Short courses start in June. Curious? Details at smu.edu/think.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Stephanie Klein. Her new book is called Moose, a Memoir of Fat Camp. She's in town for two signing events, which you can find on the Think page of KERA.org. Her blog is at stephanieklein.com. If you'd like to join the conversation, the telephone number is 1-800-933-5372, and our email address is think@kera.org. Very often, when people make comments about people who are overweight, it's always couched in terms of, well, I'm concerned about your health. And let's make no bones, we understand that there are health risks attached to being overweight. How often, though, do you think that that's at the core of people's statements about the weight of other people?
Not very often. You know, it's not criticism that's coming from a kind place usually. If it's a concerned friend, family, you know, of course. But usually the slurs, you know, hey, Moose, you know, it's not, oh, I want to help you become thin, but, you know, for your health reasons. But people, I think, can maybe rationalize it and say, well, it's okay that I'm making fun of her because maybe she'll get it through her head, and they feel that their, you know, attacks are really helping in some way and helpful in some way. And they're not.
The other thing you write about that makes you crazy is the idea that people think that if you're overweight, you've never heard that it's better to eat a bowl of carrot sticks than a bowl of chips. That this is new information.
Oh, let me guess. I should eat less and move more. Wow. Thanks for that. That's really helpful. You know what? The fact is, yeah, any diet you do, as long as you could stick to it for the rest of your life, is going to work. Sure. It's about finding something that works for you and doing it and enjoying yourself.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak to Bill in Dallas. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I just have a question, and I'm really curious about why would people drink a shot of apple cider vinegar every day, or is it once a day, or more than once a day? I'm not about losing weight. I just don't understand what that's about.
Me neither. I will say that I did it when I was 18 years old, and I didn't really know any better, and so I was searching for different methods, quirky methods to lose weight, and I thought that the apple cider vinegar actually burned fat. That was what I had thought, and it's not true.
Yeah, this is not something you're recommending to people.
Absolutely not. I'm not recommending that you eat cottage cheese and Jell-O with chopsticks to slow down your eating habits either, and that's something I learned to do in Fat Camp.
We have an email from Diana who asks, what was your weight range, lowest to highest?
I'd love to ask her why she needs to know or wants to know, because I don't really think that it has anything to do with my book. I'll answer it.
Why do you think she wants to know?
As a sense of reference, maybe, or, well, let's see, how much did you really struggle? But it doesn't make anyone's feelings less real, you know, no matter how much they weighed. I was 5'2", and I weighed 164.5 pounds. And that's, you know, it was clinically obese. And my lowest was 112 pounds, you know, when I found out, you know, that my marriage was ending. So I was miserable. So I've gone from 112 all the way up to 178 pounds.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak next to Jennifer in Dallas. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, very interesting topic and one we all struggle with. And my point of view is that, okay, up until 4 years ago, I was a size 4'6", and then now I'm not. I'm like a 10'12". And the interesting point of view that I have with myself is that I feel the same fatness. Because now, obviously, I was thin as I reflect back on it, but my self-talk to myself then and now is exactly the same. And, you know, now I've got things under control with life experiences and you know, the scale is going back down slowly. But it's just interesting to me, the ingrained patterns, self-talk, points of view that we have about this subject. And then another briefly, it's been very interesting to see how kind of liberating it is not to have to worry about fitting into those small clothes, but, you know, just accepting myself on a different level. That's it. Thanks for writing the book on a subject that we all struggle with.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Can you relate to any of that?
Oh, sure. I mean, I was saying earlier that feeling of looking in the mirror and not really seeing anything different in yourself. I mean, when I lost a lot of weight, I thought that it was going to make my shoulders, you know, more square and my legs longer, and I was going to have a different body. I wasn't, you know, it was just me, only a little more narrow. It was the same body, and it was something I didn't, you know, expect to have happen. I thought that, oh, well, when I'm thin, I'm going to be glamorous and I'm going to be able to wear these certain things. And it's just not always what we expect it to be. But in terms of the liberation of, you know, absolutely 100%, when now that I've had kids, you know, I still try to live a healthy, you know, lifestyle, but I definitely indulge. You know, I try to be mindful of my eating. But I will say it is liberating to say, you know what, I'm happy and I'm fine the way I am and I'm in a healthy range. My doctor says that I'm healthy. That is good enough.
Is there a difference, do you think, in the way men and women cope with being overweight?
I don't know. I mean, I see, you know, growing up, I saw fat as, you know, more sexual and thin as feminine. And I saw when I got too fat, I felt that it made me more masculine. Exactly. So I think it's an interesting, you know, fat being a feminist issue or what it is or how men deal with it differently than women. And I know at Fat Camp, you know, guys, I guess, shake it off. Like, hey, it's no big deal if you're fat and you're a guy. I mean, I know from experience, even growing up at my dinner table, my father could eat ribs and, you know, lick things down to the marrow of bones. And I was stuck, you know, eating a salad. And, hey, why does he get to eat it? You know, he's overweight. And it's, well, you know, because ladies don't do that. So there was that. But in terms of how they handle it and how we see ourselves, I don't know.
some of your first sexual experiences took place while you were at camp. And I'm wondering if being there shaped what you're attracted to, or if that had nothing to do with it.
Well, I think what it did was made me want someone who really wanted me for me. Because at fat camp, I knew that the guys that were interested in me weren't interested in me because I was thin. They were interested in me for who I was. And that was an amazing feeling to know that. And then once you lose weight, you know, I lost weight and I became quite thin and had guys asking me out. I didn't know how genuine it was. I was like, well, you know. Like I said earlier, I was always looking for someone who'd I spent my whole life trying to get thin just to find someone who'd love me when I was fat.
Yeah, when you got back to high school and suddenly they were asking you out, were you afraid at first that they were teasing you? Or did you know, did you feel so good about yourself at that moment that you thought?
No, I was cocky enough then. I was like, I do look good. That's right. You want to date me. So, I didn't think that they were mocking me. You know, but it didn't change immediately. Truthfully, we always think that, oh, thin's going to make us better or happier. And I came back and you know what? The kids still called me Moose.
You know, I look at these pictures of you and you have some on the website and all that. And I don't think you look horrible. And I'm wondering, obviously, if you looked at another little girl who looks like the picture of you on the back of your book, you probably wouldn't think she was horrible. And I'm wondering why you think everyone tends to be somewhat more critical of themselves than
other people. Oh, absolutely. I mean, thank God people don't see me the way I see me. You know, and I think that's true for everyone. We get so nervous, even when we're getting dressed to go out at night. Oh, well, do these shoes go with this or whatever it is? And no one's paying attention to your shoes. Nobody cares. But we care so much about, you know, our appearances. And we're social beings and it's human nature to do. So, but do I think I'm overly critical with myself? Yeah, sure. I mean, who isn't? You know,
is that, do you think that's like inherent narcissism that we're so critical of ourselves and we assume that we walk into a room and people, all eyes are on us, good or bad?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you do it even when you have to give a speech. You think, oh, God, everyone's paying attention and they're waiting for me to mess up. No, they're waiting to be entertained. They just want to hear what you have to say. It's nothing to stress over, but we all do it.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from Y, who says, I wasn't overweight as a child. I'm now in my 50s and have lost over 90 pounds by attending Weight Watchers. Let's see. I'm so grateful I didn't obsess about weight as a kid and only went on a diet once I was an adult, gaining all of it and more back. My daughter in her 20s and never overweight became anorexic last year at the same time I began Weight Watchers. And she says now she laments that her daughter, who's always been lovely, almost lost her life and will always struggle with her mental health.
That's so hard. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry for that because, you know, it's absolutely a struggle and it is hard and it affects the whole family. You know, it's a family dynamics of, you know, anorexia and bulimia, and it's a tough place. And I'm sorry to hear that your family is going through that.
Did you have issues with bulimia after your teenage years?
Not really. No. I mean, it was hard. I was like, well, what actually, you know, is bulimia? What makes you a bulimic? How many times do you have to make yourself purge to be considered bulimic? And I learned that it's not just about purging, that you're considered bulimic if you're over-exercising. So if you're exercising constantly trying to lose weight, that's considered bulimia. I actually don't consider myself, you know, ever having had bulimia because I did it, I'd say maybe, I don't know, three or four times. I mean, it wasn't a constant. It wasn't a habit. It never became habitual by any means. So I don't know.
When you got to college, you gained weight very suddenly. Like you had been very thin and then you gained weight very suddenly. Was that hard for you socially or did you figure they hadn't really known you when you were very thin?
Well, when I got to college, I got into a relationship with a guy and I was in love and there was lots of feasting to be had and I didn't worry about what anyone thought of me because I found someone and we both, you know, kind of got fat together.
It actually sounds like a lovely time when you write about it.
It was. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed myself. But then when one night when we're ordering in and we've just fooled around and he has to go and the delivery man has rung the bell and he slips on his jeans and runs to the door and then gets the food and comes back to bed and I realized that the jeans he slipped into were mine And I have a rule, never date a man who could fit into my jeans. So I had to get rid of him. No, not really. But that made me not feel so good. It made me not feel as feminine. And I wanted to maybe please him on some level and be this thin, pretty, you know, girlfriend for him, not even for myself.
I know that there have been other people that you've dated and had relationships with, and I guess your first husband had some issues with what your weight was. Is that a problem now? Does your current husband have to tell you over and over not to worry about it?
No. First of all, I don't ask him. Don't ask the question if you're not prepared for the answer. No, I don't ask him. And I have asked him, you know. There's always, does my butt look big in
these
pants?
That is a cursed question, I think, in every scenario.
You know, I could be like, you know, did these shoes make my butt look big? It doesn't matter what it is. And I don't ask him, but I have in the past. And he says, do you really want me to look at you the way you look at you? Just let me love you. You know, I love Stephanie. I love who you are as a person. And let's not change that. And I'm like, you still haven't answered the question. But he came around. He's like, no, you're not fat. But, you know, you shouldn't even worry about it.
How do your parents feel about the book?
Well, my mother still has not read it. And I'm eager to hear her reaction because I write a lot about her self-esteem and how self-esteem isn't always self-related, that self-esteem affects your children. It affects how they end up feeling about themselves and it affects your relationships. And so I'm curious to see how she feels about it. She knows that she still has self-esteem issues.
She comes across in the book as sort of passive and definitely in the shadow of everyone else in the family.
And she was. She's very, you know, quiet and doesn't stand up for herself. I saw her, you know, kind of be a doormat my whole life. And so that was my role model, putting herself down constantly, even though she is a thin, beautiful woman. I'm seeing her tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And my father read the book and absolutely loved it, which is shocking because, you know, I'm not exactly, I don't let him off the hook very easily in the mm-hmm. book. So
can you forgive him now or is it still an ongoing issue for you too?
Oh, I've forgiven him and he's apologized. He said, you know what? I could have done that, handled that better and I wasn't sensitive to it and I'm sorry, you know. And hearing that from your father is pretty moving and you're like, okay, wow, you know, aside from the fact that we know that our parents are only human and doing the best, you know, in my case, they were doing the best they could. And I forgive him for that because I know that. And you know what? I'm going to screw up my kids in some way. You know, they'll be in therapy one day for something. So
your parents are never quite as fully human as once you were raising your own children. And then suddenly
yes.
You think, oh, look at them. They did fine. Have they ever asked you to quit writing about anything in particular?
Never.
That's pretty extraordinary.
I'm very fortunate that way. Though there is a scene in the book where I'm caught just fooling around with a boy. Well, I'll tell you in a bit.
Well, actually, this is the end of the
show.
So people have to buy the book.
Have to go buy the book or check out stephaniekline.com.
It's called the book is called Moose, A Memoir of Fat Camp. You can meet Stephanie at the signing event this afternoon at 3 at Torrid in the Parks Arlington Shopping Center or the Border Store on Preston in Dallas at 7. Stephanie, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you, and there'll be cupcakes.
Excellent. My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.